There's a lot of things going on.
This is a very zany kind of game.
It was ahead of its time.
It's really clever what they've done.
It's tense, but it's very brain melty.
It's kind of a mix of everything I love in trick taking.
Hey everyone, welcome to Trick Talkers, your favorite podcast about trick takers, shedders, climbers, and other card games. I'm Johnny.
I'm Ryan.
And I'm Patrick.
And tonight's episode is brought to you by our three wonderful patrons, Ryan Hopkins, Faridin, and David Clark. Thanks, guys.
Thanks.
Thank you so much. Sounds so insincere.
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
We really do appreciate it, though. Absolutely. It is awesome. Thank you so much for your support.
My voice always sounds like this. I'm just a very monotone person. I don't know why I do podcasting.
I wasn't referring to you. It was mainly more mine.
No, it's fine. Awkward beginnings and awkward endings. Should we take two?
No, it's good.
Okay. Yeah, right. It's raw, baby.
The raw footage.
People want to hear the real, raw version.
They know we have awkward intros and outros, and if not, they should by now.
All right, what are we here to talk about?
Well, we were off for a big break here. New Year's up, it's 2023. We did mention a lot of games we were going to try to get to over the holidays. So I think we wanted to just cover those games here and see what we actually did get to the table.
Should I go first since my list is probably going to be the shortest?
It may be the shortest, but it's probably the best.
I'm expecting it to ooze quality now because you've said that.
Yeah.
Some of it's quality, some of it not so much.
It's always quality over quantity, right?
Yeah. So I didn't get to do very much gaming over the holidays. My big goal, I got my wife Anne's End Legacy of Gravehold. And I was really hoping that we would break that out over the holiday. And it is still in the shrink today. We almost played it yesterday. Ended up running out of time. And then we were planning on playing it today. And then my wife realized she had a doctor's all-hands meeting tonight. So I don't know when we're going to play it. Hopefully soon. But that was the biggest disappointment. On the plus side, I did get her Wingspan, like I said, the expansion, and I said I didn't want to play it because I don't really love Wingspan, but we probably would. We didn't play that either, so one negative, one positive. But we did play Nana, which was one of the games that I had said I wanted to play, and that was a big hit, so much so that I ended up getting a copy from Steven in the PGC Discord. Had a copy from one of the Korean copies. So he sent me that to give to my mother-in-law for her birthday coming up this weekend. And
that'll be a lovely gift.
Yeah. Yeah. They really liked the artwork. I mean, it was pretty funny because I was like, it's kind of hard to get. Like, I'll have to try to track down a copy. And they're like, well, we could just play with a deck of cards, right? And I was like, yeah, but that takes away, like, all the magic of the game.
How can you make the animal noises? And, you know, do you realize the blood, sweat, and tears that's involved in getting hold of one of these games?
Right? Yeah. So I told them that I would not play Nana with a standard deck. So I got them one. And other than that, we got a very nice Crokinole board. My in-laws got it for me and my wife.
Oh, nice.
And, yeah, so we played a little bit of Crokinole. And we also played this game called Spy Alley, the card game. So Spy Alley is an older game. I had never even heard of it, never played it. I guess they just came out with the card game pretty recently. I looked it up after we played it, and I couldn't even find anything on it. So my mother-in-law got my father-in-law this game for Christmas, and they asked if I could read the rules and teach it to them while they were over. They spent the night on Christmas. So I learned the rules, sat down, taught the game. It's this social deduction game where you get a card dealt to you and it tells you that you're a spy from one of five countries. I think it's five or six countries. And you have to play cards. Some cards face up, some cards face down. And the win condition is to have a certain number of items from your country. A minimum number of them have to be face up, so that way your opponents have a certain amount of information about who you might be, and then other cards are allowed to be face down. And once you achieve the win condition, you have to survive another round when it comes back to you. If you've started the turn with the win condition, you can flip over your face down cards. and you'd win the game. Or the last person standing wins, because on your turn, you can, instead of taking a turn, you can guess what another player is. And if you get it right, you eliminate them. And so on the second turn around, I guessed who everybody was. And everybody like stormed away from the table and declared that I had ruined Christmas.
Really? What made it so easy then to guess, Johnny? I mean,
it's a really bad game. It wasn't like I didn't do it. Like, it wasn't hard to figure out. Like, they're not gamers like we are, but anybody who's played these types of games would have had just as easy a time figuring out who everyone was. It's a bad game.
Not up your alley.
But no. I should have seen that one coming.
You should have done.
But that was the story of how I ruined Christmas, though.
Yeah. Were they like core gaming mechanisms? I guess I'm trying to figure out what would make a non-gamer person not be able to understand the thing. Because like, if it's a bad game, I'm just trying to figure out like if it would actually be a game that a non-gamer might enjoy if it was just a whole bunch of non-gamers around the table, like, baffling around.
So I guess non-gamer is probably not the right word. It doesn't really have anything to do with gaming ability, but I guess if you're good at social deduction games, I mean, and I don't know if a lot of people know if they're good at social deduction if they're not gamers, right? Like, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I guess that's why I group it as gamers and non-gamers. But anybody who is good at social deduction will be able to figure out pretty easily what people are doing, because you have to play four face-up cards, and at least two of them have to be items from your country, and there are wild cards that can be from multiple countries, but they're not from all countries. They're not like wilds that could be anything. So if somebody plays a wild, unless they're the type of person that would do that to throw you off, then you've already eliminated like two out of the five or six choices. So it's things like that that make it way too easy. Okay.
So in terms of being easy, right, let's do it now. I've got two items. I've got fish and chips and a cup of tea.
You're British.
What, that is that the kind of level we're talking about?
Yes. Right. Basically.
Well, yeah, I never heard of Spy Alley the card game. I was aware of the original board game, have never played it, but don't have an interest to play it, and it doesn't sound like I'd want to seek out the card game either.
Not after that.
Definitely. I don't know. I mean, Ryan, you like everything. Maybe you'd love it.
Yeah, those are the types of games I tend not to like, though. The partier, social deduction, player elimination in particular type games. If everyone can't have fun around the table the whole time, then that's not really the game I want at my table.
No.
Right.
Did you get anything else played, Johnny?
We played a couple rounds of Shipwreck Arcana. Have either of you played that?
I have.
I think so.
It's pretty fun.
I like it, and I'm not sure maybe if we, it like it, it's felt like it was very dependent, like how easy or hard it was very dependent on just the sequence of cards that came out.
No, I can see that.
Obviously, there's definitely some player ability involved. It's definitely not a game of luck, but that part of it made it seem like it could be very hit or miss. And I'm trying to decide if it's a game that I really like or that I like the idea of, because I think it's such a cool idea. It just doesn't always seem to work.
Well, the clue's in the name. It's a sinking ship.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's one of those, as a game itself, it's okay, but I think it needs to be a mechanic or a portion of a game that has a bigger overall plan. I think that could make it more interesting to build upon it. Because, like you said, the way the order of the cards, and I guess for people who aren't aware, who haven't played it, it's sort of a deduction game. There are cards out in the row, and there's these tiles in front of you. It's been a while, so Johnny, remind me, it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 that you have, or?
Up to 7. It's because you always draw 2 tiles from a bag, and they're also numbered 1 through 7. And then there's 4 tarot cards that all say different things, like if one of your tiles is a 1, 4, or 7 and the other is not, play a tile here. One will say if all of your tiles are odd, play one of them here. Stuff like that. And sometimes depending on the 4 tarot cards that are out, if you play a tile on one, it will immediately eliminate a big chunk of possibilities of what your remaining tile is. And then other times it might eliminate almost nothing. And that part is the random part that I'm talking about that can make the game either very easy or very difficult.
That sounds like an interesting one, but it sounds like one that's on two extremes. So, I mean, when it's difficult, is it fun?
We had a couple rounds where it was so difficult it was basically impossible.
Right.
Like, we had to take random guesses at what people were holding for their tile, because the timer is each of those tiles that you're placing on the tarot cards have a number of pips on them, and each tarot card has a number of pips that when played to that card will expire the card. And every time a card is expired, it ticks up a doom timer. And once you get to 7 doom points, you lose. If you guess somebody's tile correctly, no matter how many pips they played on a card, a card can't be expired that turn if you've made a correct guess. So you can't just keep going around not guessing. And sometimes it's so hard to eliminate possible choices that you're making a guess out of, you know, one of three possibilities.
Right.
And a game that forces you to just take a 30% chance at guessing something, that doesn't really necessarily feel good. But then there were other times where it was actually the combination of tarot cards that came out allowed us to eliminate things, but not without having a pretty good discussion about, like, where they played meant. Also factoring in the person's personality and what we think they would have been thinking when they played this. And when it was that way, it was a lot of fun. When it was random guesses, it was kind of stupid. And the art's really good. I like it. It's very simple, but it looks like a tarot deck, basically. It's the way it's designed to look.
Yeah, the art does look quite eye-catching. We'll give it that.
Well, sort of continuing here with non-trick-taking talk. I know this is crazy. We've gone so long without actually talking about a trick-taker on here.
Can you believe it?
I promise we'll start talking about them soon. But updating everybody on the 10x10 that I did with my wife, Michelle, we had 35 games left over the Christmas weekend that we had to play. And we did manage to play all of the games. We didn't get them done that Christmas weekend itself. We played 28 of them on that Saturday and Sunday, and then ended up sort of sprinkling in one or two games throughout the week up until New Year's Eve to get them all done. So we did do it, which is pretty good. There are a few games that are already on the sale pile. Yes, thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, right. You couldn't see it, but Johnny was just doing a little mini round of applause there.
Yeah, On Tour definitely went on the sale pile. After 10 plays of it, very quickly in a row, we just realized it's not one of our favorite roll and writes. So that one's going. But everything else, we still enjoyed it. We played a lot of them in a row, and it was fun. Don't know if I would recommend doing that again. So as far as actual card games go, and trick-taking specifically, I got to play Airlof again. I originally backed this when it was on Kickstarter, played it a bunch when it had come out, and then sort of sat on my shelf for a while and had a chance to play a couple two-player card games. I'm glad I got that out again. So Johnny's cat has jumped on the table and keeps messing with his mic.
Its tail
and I'm just
keeps
watching.
Licking the microphone, and it's mesmerizing.
Great.
Your cat isn't called Hairloff, is it, Johnny, for any chance?
Sorry, guys.
No,
Schmoo's famous on train shuffling.
There you go. Get her famous on TikTokers. So I got to play Airlof, and I really love what this game does for a two-player trick-taking game. Having the wanting to take a certain number of middle tricks, but there's also bidding involved in the game as well. But it does the nice thing where you will get 1 point per trick that you've gotten. And then if you manage to hit your bid, you'll get a bonus 10 points. And then if you take 3 or 4 tricks, you will get 5 additional points. So normally the best you could score is a bid of 4 tricks. Take 4 tricks, so you get 14 points plus the 5 bonus for a total of 19. Be a really good round. However, you could still bid 7, 8, 9 tricks and hit that number and get just as many points. Because it's a two-player, well, it is a two- or three-player game, but really the two-player version is the bread and butter, like what it was designed for. And there's 15 tricks in total. So if one person's only taking four tricks, the other person's going to take 11. Bid 11, you're going to get a lot of points out of it. Bids are all secret as well. So you and your opponent get your hand dealt to you. You make your bid and keep it hidden for the entire round. And there are specific cards that have abilities on it. The 1, 3, 6, and 9 will do certain things when you win a trick with it. Draw a card from the undealt draw pile. Swap a card with your opponent. Make your opponent lead. Or steal a trick from your opponent. And then there's a couple other wild cards. There's one that just destroys the trick. And then there's one that will make you lose the trick. Kind of like the Kraken and the White Flag in Skull King. So it just has a lot of meshes between all these other games that I really like. And now that I've played it again, I have been wanting to play it more versus Catchy or Jekyll versus Hyde.
So just on that, Ryan, Herlov's a game that I've played myself on Board Game Arena. I've played it quite a lot. Had a good time with it. Really, really hard to shoot the moon, which I know you love doing, because of all the powers on the certain cards. I would like to play this in person, actually. The only thing I'm fearful of is there are obviously a lot of powers to remember. Now, I'm not saying you couldn't have a player aid to sort of help and obviously play it to a few times to sort of grasp that in your head.
Well, the game does come with a player aid that's really helpful, actually,
right,
for it.
Right. So you've not found that to be too sort of overburdening or heads down affair kind of thing?
Mm-mm. No, okay. The powers themselves are relatively straightforward. The cards themselves have a little symbol in the middle to remind you that card has an ability. So if you play the card, you can double check the player aid. And yeah, I mean, again, it's the 1, 3, 6, and 9. And the abilities themselves are relatively straightforward.
Yeah.
So yeah, not too difficult.
It's a good little one.
How hard is this one to track down?
That's a great question, actually. I don't think it's widely available. You might be able to get it on Dutch Jolly Games' website. Jolly Dutch's website.
Okay. It sounds cool.
It's good. It is good fun. Yeah, Ryan is correct, and I can see it. I understand the appeal of it. Something I'd like to play in person.
Yeah, so continuing on the two-player card games, slightly deviating away from trick-taking again, Drones versus Seagulls. Now, I did just say Erloff as well, that I'm trying to grab and play more as a two-player for trick-taking, but for just a two-player only card game in general, Drones versus Seagulls has taken over my life. It's become my Discord profile icon. It's the background on my phone. I made a rules video for it on my Cards and Bard channel. I talk about it everywhere. I'm trying to get everybody to play it with me. I love this game. It's so silly, but it's so much fun.
You know you're in deep when you've got it as your background on your phone, don't you? That's when you realize, actually, you know, these seagulls are starting to take over my life, right?
Yeah. The wallpaper for it is perfect. It's great. Oh, it just looks so good on my phone. But yeah, so for people who don't know it, it is a two-player line battler. So similar to games like Schattenhausen or Rift Force. So there are games where there's multiple lanes that you can play your cards to. Depending on where you play it, certain things might happen. So in specifically Drones versus Seagulls, the lanes are known as outposts. And each outpost has a token that has an ability on it. When you play your card to that outpost, you check the strength of all of your cards that you've played versus all of the strength of your opponent's cards. The cards are valued 1 through 5, and their strength is equal to their value. So if you play a 2, that's 2 strength. If you have more strength than your opponent at a location, you flip that token to your color. If the token is already on your side, nothing happens. But if you actually flipped it from your opponent's color to yours, you will trigger the outpost's ability, and you must trigger them. The abilities that you can do are things like move your own card, move an opponent's card, take another turn, recruit one of your opponent's cards, destroy an opponent's cards, flip them over so that their value becomes 1 no matter what the card is. So things like that. So it's this idea that you're trying to play cards to certain outposts that will trigger combos. Because let's say you play one of your cards to move your card. Well, if you move that card to a new outpost that flips over, because you have control of it, you'll trigger that outpost ability, which might make you move something else, which triggers something else. So the ultimate goal to win a round is to get all seven outposts or have the majority when one player runs out of cards. It's a best 2 out of 3. It plays really quick. It's really snappy. And the designer actually posted on BGG. It's not in the actual rulebook itself, but on BGG, he posted a drafting variant where at the beginning of the round, players will draft which outposts tokens go on the board. And I actually got to play that yesterday, and it is a lot of fun. It might be my preferred way to play it because having the choice of which tokens you get to place is really cool. So there's a lot of layers to think in a very simple thing, just a drafting setup.
And is the only place to get this on Philibert.net?
That is correct. Currently, right now, there's only French copies available. So you'd have to go to Philibert. But it is on Board Game Arena that you can play now for free to try it if you'd like before you buy it. If you want to play against me, my username is rcampbell04. I'd love to play.
He's gagging for the next game. I tried it on...
I'll do it. Start one with me right now. We'll play while Pat finishes.
When I finish talking, there'll be
perfect. Yeah.
Take
over, Pat.
I tried to play Drone vs. Seagulls, but I didn't understand the rules and I didn't appreciate the beauty of the game because I sort of muddled through my first game without reading the rule book, which is a cardinal sin, right? So I'd love to revisit it. I'm a big fan of Shot and Totten. It sounds like it could be, I don't know if it's fair to say, Shot and Totten with more of a take that element and the sort of the combo-tastic side of things you see in these, you know, roll and writes. It sounds like a mix of these different elements, and I like the sound of that.
Yeah, I will say, I mean, as much excitement as I'm showing for it, I think listeners probably have heard me talk about games enough to know that I like Johnny keeps saying I like everything, but I do want to sort of dial it down a little bit. That it might not be for everybody. It is kind of chaotic. Those combos can be crazy. It is actually rather AP heavy too. If you are playing against somebody who wants to stare at the board and try and figure out what's the right card to play that I can then move here and do this and do that and do this and then trigger that, like, you might need to flip over 5 tokens to win this round, and somebody might sit there for 5-6 minutes trying to come up with the way, and it might not be there, and you're just like, okay, you can't do it, let's go, and they want to try and figure it out. So that is a fair warning to it, which is why, though, on Board Game Arena, you could play async, then it won't be so bad. Players can take their times taking their turn, but yeah, if you're playing a live game, that is something you would want to be cautious of.
Set a timer, you know, that's what we did with 5 Tribes when we used to eat a whole ice cream by the time it took my friend to take his go. So we just said, look, you've got a minute and a half to make your move. That's it. It's not about the best move. It's about making a good move, right?
That's a game I haven't played in a while.
Classic, John. Yeah.
Yeah.
Moving right along, though, I have a couple more here that I just want to talk about. Doppelkopf.
Yes.
This is yeah. I know,
let's talk about that one more.
Yeah. This is one that I got into a lot last year. Played it heavily, marked up my own deck, because you can just use a regular deck of playing cards. The deck in Doppelkopf is 9 to ace, essentially, in the suits, but everything is doubled. There are 2 of every card. And the deck makeup and the deck hierarchy is a little bit weirder. It's an ace 10 game, so it's ranked ace 10, king, queen, jack, 9, essentially. But anyways, it is a 4-player hidden partnership game. And try to show it to a few gaming friends here, and it just didn't really hit well. So I was only ever playing online or on the app. And I decided to bring it back again last night with 3 new people, and they all loved it. One of them actually petitioned to turn our Monday Night Trick Taker night into Doppelkopf night. Which is awesome.
That is awesome.
Yeah, I'm really excited for that. I know I've been talking a lot here, so I want to let Johnny sort of take over why he likes the game, and I'll kind of chime in as necessary. And I think, Patrick, have you played this too as well?
It's one I'm very eager to play. Haven't got around to it. As with, half my collection. But anyway, I digress. I'd like to play Doppelkopf, so maybe we should set it up where the 3 of us, I'm sure you wouldn't object.
Absolutely not.
Up there with the seagulls and the drones.
Yeah, I mean, we did like a, really Ryan had was the only one who'd really played a significant amount of this when we did our standard decks episode, even though it's not really a, well, it's not a standard deck in the,
that's a double standard deck.
Yeah. It's not really standard in the US, but yeah. Since then I've played a bunch of this and I definitely think it's worth doing its own episode on. So I won't say too much here just so we can save that for, you know, the three of us can play a bunch. But I will say that I've probably nearly caught up to Ryan in the number of hands played of Doppelkopf since the last episode. I've played a lot on the app and it's very deep. And I think without the app, it would be very difficult to justify trying to play much Doppelkopf because I think it takes so many plays just to even get a grasp of what a good hand is for certain solos and you have to do mandatory solos. So like, that's really important to be able to evaluate your hand well. And I think, you know, I've played hundreds of hands now and I still get it wrong more often than I get it right. I think I'm getting better, but it's not an easy game to evaluate hands and to play well. And the fact that you have to rewire your brain a little bit for the ranks, you know, the fact that it's ace 10 is weird. You know, most people probably are not going to be used to that. And it took me a little while. And the fact there's like 20 something trumps in the deck, it, you know, it's not like one suit is trump. It's, you know, it takes a little bit of getting used to. It's a lifestyle game for sure. But with the app, you can play it basically solo asynchronously. Like whenever you have a chance, you just play a hand, put it away. Game will be there waiting for you when you're ready to pick it back up. And it shortens that learning curve a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do want to just give a quick story with my game of it last night. We only played 8 hands. So as Johnny said, this is a game that requires a lot of hands to be able to analyze what's a good hand, what's soloable, what's not. Well, the second hand of the game, one of the players played a silent marriage, which, to explain quickly what that is in Doppelkopf, the Queen of Clubs are the cards that help determine the hidden partnership. When you deal out the cards, if you're dealt one of the Queen of Clubs, you are partners with the other person who was dealt the other Queen of Clubs. But if you manage to get dealt both of the Queen of Clubs, then at the beginning of the round, you make this announcement of a reservation to let people know you have them. You can, however, choose to forego announcing it. And then what you're doing eventually is silently saying that you're going to be playing solo by yourself against the other people. Having only the second hand of the game, had no idea how to play it out. And we were probably 7 tricks in and there was a couple fingers pointing. Like, we all knew that the one player was on the right team for sure because he played his one queen. But trying to figure out the other two, there was fingers pointing. I think you're on the right team. You just gave him 10 points on this trick. And we were getting down to the second to last trick is when he played his other queen. And then everyone else is like, oh man, okay, this is going to end poorly for you because he was so far behind. He was not going to get enough points. And it was just funny to see him try it, though, and see how it might have worked for him.
So is that just kind of, it sounds like there's a little social deduction element to the game when you're sort of trying to work out and question who's who. Kind of, maybe who's the wrong thing but to say here. Maybe it's who's got what cards or who's working solo. And that makes it sound pretty interesting.
Yeah.
And there are some conventions like leading trump if you're on the
right team.
Ray team, yeah.
Versus leading. Yeah,
I don't have them all memorized, but yeah, there are certain conventions with you wouldn't lead a trump if you were on the what's the other team called?
Contra.
The Contra team, yeah. Stuff like that. So some of it's conventions, some of it is trying to deduce it, and you might try to play something. I think maybe you might want to play something to try to make somebody think that you're on their team.
Right, bluffing element. You could double bluff, etc. Yeah. Right, that sounds really cool.
Yeah, because it's still a must-follow trick taker. So sometimes, like, you're forced to play that 10, whether you wanted to or not. It was your last of that suit, and people might think, "Oh, you did that to give the points," but really, you're just playing it because you had to. Yeah. So it sometimes gives the false sense of a bluff versus an actual bluff. Yeah, it's neat, nice. But. Like Johnny said, I think we're going to spend a whole episode on it because I'd love to do that. So I think we'll save some more for that. Yeah. Moving into my last game here, though, was Kabuken. And this is a game from Japan that is sort of, but not really at all, a climbing game. It's a fighting card game that's like, it's weird. It's like Combo Tracks, but not Combo Tracks, where you're making these combos of cards to attack your opponents. It's its own mechanic, I guess, but it's a lot of fun. It plays 2 to 4 players in the base game, and then you can buy the expansion that goes up to 7. I don't think I'd ever play it that high. I might try 4-player once, but 2 or 3 seems really good. So the quick synopsis of the game is you have a hand of 6 cards, and you can play 2 or 3 cards in a specific type of combination to do a certain amount of damage to your opponent. So 2 cards of the same color and the same number will do 1 damage. When you attack your opponent, though, they can choose to counterattack. Depending on the attack that you attack with will determine how they counterattack. So, for example, with the attack that I just went over, all you have to do is just play the same number. So if I play 2 5s, Johnny just has to play a 5 and he's counterattacked me. The thing is, I can counterattack back. Players just sort of keep counterattacking until one of them can't or chooses not to. In which case, that player takes the damage, draws back up to 6 cards, and then becomes the attacking player. So I might play 2 5s, Johnny counterattacks me with a 5, I don't counterattack him back, I take 1 damage from my own punch, and then I'm attacker again, and I go again. The idea is you're trying to get your opponent down to 0 health, or if the deck runs out, whoever has the most health at that point. That's in the 2-player game. If it's a 3-player game, or more, of course, it's still if one person gets to 0 health, it's whoever has the most health left would win. You share the victory if it's a tie. And then when the deck runs out, you shuffle it once. The second time it runs out, then you check to see who has the most health. Then, of course, you can add in abilities. There are characters that you can all pick that'll do different crazy broken things. And then you also have items that you can do extra crazy broken things with. I really enjoyed this game. I played it once at 2-player and twice at 3-player and had a lot of fun.
Yeah, it looks cool. I mean, it's Saibepu artwork. That's always a plus. I do feel like I would have trouble getting most people that I know to be into the, you know, to get past the artwork. Because while it's Saibepu and I really like her artwork, it's very heavily Japanese anime style, and that's not really the thing that, you know, most of the people that I play games with are really into. So that would be the one barrier, I think, for getting this to the table up, but it's really cute.
It does look cute.
I will say, though, if you did play without the character abilities, you could avoid showing the Japanese anime art. Because the numbers themselves kind of look like a POW sort of right, in the background, yeah. But it's definitely not Japanese anime at all. So just don't let them know that there's character abilities.
Just hide it. Show them later.
Yeah, right.
Or just write them on a sheet of paper, because you'd need paste-ups anyways, since the cards are Japanese.
Oh, there you go.
But it is really well done. I mean, that's more of an issue with...
Your players?
Yes, yeah. It's an issue with my friend. My friends are flawed, not the game. But it looks really cute. It sounds cool. I would play it.
Yeah, it does sound cool.
I was actually sort of in your neck of the woods couple weeks ago for work, and I almost messaged you, but I figured you wouldn't meet me. You wouldn't meet me halfway. I was in near Philly.
Oh, that's really far. Yeah, that's a 5-hour drive.
It's a lot closer to you than New Hampshire.
It's true. It is. But I got to make a whole weekend out of that.
Yeah, I got this image of you sort of reaching for the door handle and then sort of holding back a bit, thinking, "Oh, I don't know if I can do it." Kind of thing.
Yeah. I don't like to travel much. I'm very much love to be at home.
Well, if we do ever manage to get together and play a game, I'll just remind you to bring this one so I can try it.
Perfect. Patrick, what have you been getting played? I think.
And we're all out of time for tonight. So
that's been lovely. I'm glad you all we've all got to have our moments.
Let's go play our game of Drones versus Seagulls, yeah. Johnny.
Can you guys stop selling me games? Because I've got a 12 game limit for the year. So, you know, we're already pushing Seagulls over my heads and all sorts. So.
Is that net?
Yeah. Well, it's 12 games for the year, including I'm not even a trade that I get in, I'm still counting it as a game acquired.
So even if you get rid of a game and get a game, that doesn't count as zero.
Correct.
That counts
as one.
I'm being
really harsh on myself because 138 acquisitions last year. I thought, okay, well, you know, maybe I'll slow down a little bit this year. So,
I mean, I'll root for you, but I'd bet against you if I had to put money on this.
Yeah, everybody said that.
I told him he'd fail within the first month, but good luck.
Yeah, the missus has already said, well, we were here this time last year and look at what happened last year. So nobody's got any faith, but you never know.
I'm pretty sure one of the first things I ever saw you say on Discord was like, I'm not buying any more games at all. Hiatus. And then like an hour later, you're like, okay, I just bought Trick Takers or whatever.
My finger slipped, Johnny. It's different, right? We'll see how it goes this year.
Well, I think every so often it'd be fun to update the listeners. So at this point, what is your number?
So I'm going to say six. I've got nine left for the year, but that includes Zuvadis, which I'm backing next week, which looks great. Nitsia game. And also a game called Marrakesh, really old Stefan Feld game, hidden gem. But anyway, so I'm kind of down to nine. So I'm done for the quarter. We'll just say that.
So one a month and you've done more than one a week so far.
My missus said, well, hang on. I thought you said it was one a month. And I said, well, if I go mental at the start of the year and then haven't got any games left at the end of the year, that's my, you know, I've shot myself in the foot, haven't I? So We'll see.
I'm just waiting for Tokyo game market to come around. Yeah. That's when we'll see
the real me, right? The real me. Mm-hmm. Well, the games I have got played or did manage to get played, because I'm trying to get through them as well. That's the problem with too many acquisitions. It's finding time to actually play these things. Prophecy, I did get that to the table. And that was kind of builds on the system that's in place in 99, which could be played with a standard deck of cards, if anyone's curious to try that. But it's utilizing the cards to make the bids. So you're bidding on how many tricks you're going to take, utilizing the cards. There's different suits, of course, as you'd expect, but those different suits are worth different values when you're actually making your bid. Trump suit every round. The neat thing about this one is there are some, unlike with 99, there's additional cards that have kind of powers. So, you know, there's a card that's always worth half again of the previous card that was played. There's kind of there's a cool shaman. There's a, you know, lowest trump, highest trump. A few different wild animals thrown into the mix. Got like this temple theme on it. I printed, you know, I got the French version and printed out the English rules. The other neat thing, just to add in, if anyone's played 99, is if you're ahead in the game, you've got to reveal sort of your hand while you're playing, or it's either your hand or your bids. I play so many of these games, I'm losing touch. But anyway, it's really neat. We had a blast with that one, coming from 99 and seeing how, you know, this system can be tweaked slightly. Have you guys tried that one yet, or are you thinking about trying it or come across it?
So I've got your list of things that you've played over the holidays, and I only recognize the name of like two of them.
Okay.
Well, I actually have a copy coming on the way. I was going to wait for the English version of Prophecy, but I had a friend making a filibert order after I played Drones versus Seagulls with him. He wanted to buy a copy of that. I figured, well, if you're doing it, just toss Prophecy on for me. So I've got the French version coming my way. I have not played it, but I'm well aware of the rules. And I also, like you, love 99, and I'm excited to see those little tweaks that it brings.
Yeah, the real sort of pressure that it brings is, you know, using the cards. I think it's really clever. So that's the bulk. That's the gist of that game. Another one, which is actually, to me, a hidden gem, is a game called Tokami. I don't feel like people speak about it enough. It's a few years old now, and I feel like it's perhaps got lost with the passage of time. It's not a trick taker. It's more like a shedding game where, you know, if you run out of cards, the game ends and you're trying to get rid of your cards. But you also might not necessarily want to make certain plays in the game. So to give you a little bit more perspective on it, let me just find out where the rules are. I've got them hidden somewhere. Just a second.
Let me tell you how this game plays. I do not know. It's got horses and they're pretty.
It's got horses in it. So yeah, it's set in medieval Japan. Really nice theme on it. The cards are lovely. They've all got horses on them. And basically, the idea is you're playing to, there's two piles in the middle. You're playing to the either pile that's in the center of the table. And you're trying to put the cards down in a numerical order. So for example, if there's a four on the table, you could play a five or you could play a three. You may also play three cards down on the table as well. So you, if there's a four on the table, you could play a five, six, seven, etc. So some turns you might get rid of one card. Some turns you might get rid of three cards. If you can't play, you have to take the whole pile that's on the table. Look at your hand. See if you have a three of a kind of anything, because these numbers appear several times in the deck. And if you have, you put the three of the kind down in front of you. That will score you positive points towards the end of the game. If you can't, it's tough luck. If the game ends and you've still got cards in your hand, then you score negative points for every card in your hand, except whether, you know, you've got a duplicate number. So if you've got a four in your hand and or two fours, you'd only score negative four instead of negative eight. Very clever little puzzle. I've tried it with three players, and when you play it a few times, you realize that you can actually make some really clever plays in this game of, I think it translates to wild horse catch. Very catchy, I know. It does also fit back sleeved in the ultra thin. Remind me the name, Ryan. What ultra thin sleeves am I thinking of? You're a sleeve connoisseur.
The KMC Perfect Fits?
That's the one. I knew you'd know. It was no good asking Johnny, was it?
Well, speaking of sleeves, I'm actually sleeving a game.
I can't believe it's unbelievable.
But I have to. It's an LCG. I'm getting back into Netrunner.
Either of you played that? Oh yeah.
So you kind of have to sleeve that. So
I can't believe it, Johnny. That's a turning point, I think, in your life.
But talking to me though, real quick, that sounded like Llama almost. But a more thoughtful with your card play, just mainly the scoring part, where you have two fours in your hand, you only score four instead of eight. Llama does the same thing. You're shedding out your cards, but it's a very simplistic Uno style. Right. You're just playing equal to or one higher. So this one has more interesting card play. But I really liked that scoring from Llama.
Yeah.
So to know that this game sort of builds upon that.
Yeah. The cards in your hand, yeah, they're negative points, and the three of a kinds that you've played are positive. So I feel like, as someone who's also got Llama, this is my preferred game. Like you said, it feels like there's more room for clever play. I mean, Nitzy is a genius, but this particular game seems to me to be more interesting of the two. But yeah, it's a fair comparison to sort of hark back to Llama, I feel. Speaking of Nitzia, No Mercy, that's sort of a very quick pushy luck card game where you don't want, you want to try and bank your cards that you've collected. So you're basically going to be drawing cards out of a deck. If you pull the same number more than three times and try to put it in front of you, you sort of wipe all your cards and they all kind of disappear, which is pretty brutal. You've got to survive a journey round the table. Everybody plays card, you know, draws these cards in this pushy luck game. And it's just it's a barrel of laughs. It's really good fun. It's really quick. Not much skill involved, but there is a little bit of, you know, if you happen to pull a card that's got a number on it and somebody else has got those numbers in front of them too, you can then take all of their cards that they've got in front of them. I realize I probably shouldn't work for Reiner Knizia's marketing department here, but No Mercy is well worth a look if you like the idea of just a very quick pushy luck card game, generates lots of laughs and not too much on the, you know, the thinking side. You could literally teach this and play this within 5 minutes. So that's No Mercy. What else? Just a couple more I'll mention. Mahjong. Have you guys ever played?
I have not.
Once or twice a long time ago.
Right. How did you get on?
I remember doing poorly.
Okay. Right.
That's about as much of it as I remember.
Right. Okay. Because I've played it quite a few times now. It's slowly sinking in, although I do feel I was at a slight disadvantage playing Mahjong because the set that I've played on the most is at my partner's parents' house, who are from Hong Kong. And literally, you know, there is one suit that is all in Chinese and every character is Chinese. So I sort of have a lesson in Chinese every time I play it. I'm like, well, you know, what's number four? How do I, you know, what's the east and south west wind in Chinese? It's fortunately, if you are looking to play Mahjong, there are sets with English characters on the top of them. That does make life a lot easier. But essentially, you can see that it could easily be a card game. Apparently, sailors used to play it on ships, and that's why they have them as tiles, so that it didn't blow away. I can see the logic. But very fun. It's also a bit like a set collection game where, you know, you and other people at the table could be competing for different suits or the same suit. And you're trying to get the tiles in a optimum hand, if you like. You're trying to construct this hand to get the most amount of points. There's a little bit of, obviously, there's luck in there. Some people call it Chinese bingo, but I do think there's quite a bit to it. And depending on what variant you play, there's all sorts of Mahjong variants out there. So well worth it if you've got the time and want to explore. I think there's a version on BGG a guy came up with called Zung Jung, which supposedly is a distilled version of Mahjong for people who want to get into it. I'm going to talk about Ready, Set, Bet. Have you guys maybe heard of that one?
That sounds familiar, but I haven't played it.
So that is a real-time horse racing betting game. Again, nothing to do with trick-taking at all. But you have this big tableau on the table. You're literally placing bets on horses that you think are going to win the race, which can be conducted through an app. So mobile phone app, put it on the screen. You have this big announcer going, oh, you know, commentating. I mean, you can commentate yourself if you're feeling enthusiastic, but
I feel like that's something that you would do. So I'm surprised you'd use the app.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, if you do the commentating and you roll the dice, then you can't really participate in the betting, which I suppose is where the fun of the game is.
It's like being the GM.
Yeah, exactly. Different horses will move differently relative to the dice. Some will get bonuses if certain dice rolls are rolled in succession. Some won't. There's a deck of cards in there, which makes the betting more interesting. Although I have to confess, I did play this on Christmas Day. My mum literally got to the table, plonked all the bets down in one row, then sat back down on the chair and said, there we go, I'm done, that's my bet. And I said, well, you're supposed to bet as the race plays out. Yeah, I know, but my legs hurt was the response. I then had a sister who was then saying, right, well, can you do everything for me? Can you put my bets on? I'm not, you know, I just want to sit down a second. You know, so it flopped a little bit, as you can imagine. Probably as good as your Spy Alley the card game, Johnny, you know, in terms of the reception. Yeah.
Sounds like your family has a bad relationship with standing up.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Even though I'm a stand-up guy, what's with that? But I have played it again since successfully. So, yeah, it is a great game, undoubtedly. But like you were saying, like you guys, we talk about on these episodes, the group, you know, you need the right group for Doppelkopf. You need the right group for, dare I say it, Spy Alley the card game. And you certainly need the right group for some games that are like this, where you know, you've got high energy at the table. So often we theorize on here, oh, was the game good? Actually, you know, were the people good for playing the game?
I don't want to say anything because that means I'm talking bad about your family, but
yeah.
I do agree.
Talk bad, please. Yeah, it's fine.
Do they listen?
No. This my mum and my sister aren't really not you know, my sister plays the odd game, and you see, you know, you're explaining it, and you see her eyes starting to glaze over after 5 minutes of rule explanation.
Right. Ryan, you're good to go. You can say what you want to say.
Yeah.
Perfect. All right, here we go.
Let's get rid of yourself.
But no, I mean, I absolutely agree with that. It doesn't matter what the game is. You need to have the right group for it. You know, your number one game of all time could end up being a bad game of it if you play it with people who aren't prepared for that style of game or whatever it might be. So
I've sold some of my top games because I can't get them to the table.
Yeah. Yeah. I have given up on forcing people to play some of those games that I really like, because that's not a fun way to play a game. So I get it.
No, and that's why cards are always, I mean, with a few exceptions, right? You pull out a card game. We've said this before. It's so much easier to get people to be like, oh, it's, you know, it's just a pack of cards. How hard can it be, right? Unless, and then you tell them, well, actually, it's a lifestyle game. Actually, you know, you've got the ace and the 10 in a different order. And no, I'm joking, but you get my point.
Yeah, totally.
Yep.
Anything else you played, though?
A couple of games, a couple more. Trick Raiders. I know this was, it's been talked about through various communities recently. Liked it. Trick Raiders reminded me of Idle Hands a little bit. I know Ryan, you're a big fan of Idle Hands. But essentially, you've got cards that are dealt out on the table, which you must lead to tricks with. And then you've also got cards that you've got in your hand. And you can extend the cards on the table that if you want to, if you think you're going to lead loads of tricks, you can add to it, or you can take away from it. And there are bonuses in either case. And there are cards that do weird things, like, you know, if you play two cards that are the same, they cancel each other out in terms of deciding who wins the trick. You've also got certain cards with different powers on them, which can be, for example, changing the trump suit. I just thought it was really neat. It's such a small box. Don't think you'll be able to sleeve it. Sorry, mate. But such a small box. It's got like a medieval Henry VIII kind of vibe. But you don't even need to place a bid, because literally you either run out of cards to lead with on the table or you don't. There is player elimination, although not three players. You just end the round. Really cool. It, like I say, Idle Hands kind of vibe. And for anyone who doesn't know what Idle Hands is, basically you've got certain cards that you must lead to tricks as well as the cards that are in your hand.
No, I'm super excited for Trick Raiders. I have a copy currently getting shipped to me now, so should be here in a few days. I have heard the powers and abilities can be a little confusing. There needs to be some sort of player aid to help for that. So I think somebody's working on one now, which will be nice, but you know me, I love a little chaos in my game. So crazy abilities and powers like that, I'm interested in it. And the elimination bit sounds a little like Yadosu or Yados.
Yeah, I'd say that's fair. And the other thing you can do, which I've done, is if you take some wet erase pens and you write on the cards are good, really good quality, by the way. So obviously with the wet erase, you know, slightly damp cloth or finger, you can easily clean, you know, rub it all off. But at least that way you can shuffle them, the text won't change, or probably do what Ryan's going to do, sleeve them and then put something in them with the, you know, the reminder of the rule. It all helps, you know, because it's not necessarily intuitive, but perhaps that comes after a couple of two or three plays. So easy to remedy. There's not a ridiculous amount of powers. It's nothing like, you know, trick takers where you have to, there's quite a few things to remember. It's just a few little things.
So Ryan, if Trick Raiders and Quack Quack Corrupt Ducks shows up on the same day, what are you playing first?
Ooh, I think it's going to be Quack Quack.
Okay, because that might happen. Sounds like they shipped around the same time.
Yeah, that's true.
You guys not played that yet?
No.
Well, I don't have my copy yet, so I definitely haven't. Right. But yeah, mine is on its way.
It was very slow getting here.
Yes,
and then
it was.
It was very, and then it was almost as slow me getting it out in the mail to Ryan, unfortunately, which I feel very bad about.
That's all right. I got plenty of other stuff to play in the meantime. But no,
I'm sure we'll cover it. I'm sure we're going to cover it. It's a blast. That's all I'll tell you. Spoiler alert. It's great fun. Yeah.
And I think the one reason why I'm most excited with that one is just the art for it. I know a little bit about the gameplay just from people talking about it. I know more about Trick Raiders than I do Quack Quack, but I just think that one is going to, as far as table reaction with showing it to other players, taking out a DVD case and then showing them a CD, and like, it's just, it's going to be a fun little conversation piece before we even start playing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, interesting scenario happened. Ryan and I were getting copies from the designer, Anouk Kim, and we decided that we have so many games, we didn't need to rush it. So we chose to have it shipped by boat, and it got stuck somewhere at some point. And we were going to be patient and just wait it out. And Anouk had been monitoring the progress and noticed it had been sitting in the same spot for a couple of weeks, and reached out to me and said, hey, do you want me to send you another couple copies? I'll, you know, you just have to pay shipping and I'll get them right out to you, because it doesn't look like these are going to get there. And I said, we're not in any rush, so why don't we give it another week or so and see if it's moved. If it hasn't moved, we'll pay to reship it. And
3 weeks passed by.
So I didn't really follow up for a while. finally, I was like, all right, I think you're right. They probably aren't going to show up. Should we do it by air instead of boat this time? Or do you think maybe we'll get lucky this time? And I get a message back from Anouk saying, I shipped them air. Don't worry about paying for it. If the other copies show up, I'd be very happy if more people could get their hands on my game. So just give them to your friends. And about a day apart from each other, both packages showed up. So it was very, very nice of Anouk that he sent that second set. Didn't even charge us shipping. It was super nice. And it was interesting because I was actually out of the country when the packages arrived, and I got a notice saying they were going to get returned to sender if they weren't picked up before I was planning on getting back. So I was like, oh no, after all of this, they're now going to get shipped all the way back. So I called a friend and he came to my house and picked up the you know, pink slip or orange slip, whatever color it is, from the post office, and went and picked it up. So the next time I saw, he didn't open the packages or know what they were. The next time I saw him, I gave him one of the copies. And just like Ryan said, with the reaction from bringing it out on the table, he was like blown away. He was like, the fact that it was in a DVD case and then it had metal coins in it and the artwork, and his reaction was just priceless. So I have the one other copy that I need to find a good home for, but it was great getting that reaction from my friend Eric when he got his copy. Yeah, so
that's awesome.
Anouk, if you're listening, know that the extra copies are going to good homes.
It won't stay in the DVD case for long, because you can't leave it and put it back in there. It's impossible. But it's a great, I love, it's such like a steampunk retro way of doing things. Just throw it all in a DVD case, because why not? You know, it's such a cool way to present a game.
Kind of makes me want to just put all my games in DVD cases. They'd be easier to put on a shelf.
Right?
No, that's true. Well, question is, so what about if both of you had R Echo and Quack Quack Corrupt Ducks turn up on the same day?
I think it'd be Quack Quack.
Tough choice.
I mean, I'll be honest. I have both. I've had R Echo for I don't even know how long, and it's still in the shrink. I will play it at some point.
Please do. And I had to find a way of getting it in the episode, but there we go.
And I have that pretty Japanese 15th anniversary edition.
There we go. Yeah, it's such a nice way to present recycling.
Mm-hmm.
Where do we go from there? Our Echo.
Well, did you want to talk about your last one? It was Skull King.
Oh, we have talked about Skull King enough, Skull King, guys.
No, I'm only going
to
add.
I'm ready to cut this all out. Actually, you know what? Talk about it. We're going to play our game of Drones versus Seagulls, and I'll cut it out later.
No, I'm only going to add. We played Skull King, and we've talked about it before, so I'm not going to tell you how it works. But we did play with the new White Whale card, which, such good fun. The White Whale, because it's the first time I used it in a game of Skull King. And whereas before we just had that, you know, the Kraken to look out for, albeit, you know, as sort of the Doom card, the White Whale, love the interaction between the two. And love the extra chaos it adds. And you really have got to like chaos, as we discussed many times before. to appreciate Skull King. So great addition.
So I know I've said bad things about Skull King in the past. I'm not going to now.
There we go, U-turn.
And you did tell me about the Rascal scoring or something?
Yeah.
So, and it sounded much better than the original scoring. So I have not gotten rid of Skull King, and I don't plan to, and I just want to show you, this is a stack of games that I took out of my bag that I most recently brought to a game night.
We're looking at Skull King, Fool, Frank Zoo, and Maskman.
We've converted him.
So these aren't all the games that I brought, but I have packed Skull King almost every time I've gone to a game night where I thought that we might get some trick-taking in. So I am trying to give it a fair shake, but it's been it hasn't gotten to the table yet.
So 2023, sleeving a game and bringing Skull King to game nights, things have certainly changed, Johnny.
Well, I did tell you guys I have a dark history with sleeves and games. I've gone through a lot of effort to unsleeve all of my games. Not all of them, but the ones that, you know, the several that I had sleeved. So.
Some of that history is coming back.
We need an episode on your dark history. I feel like it could be interesting.
I kind of like, unless it ruins a game, I like the feel. I've mentioned this on episodes before. I like the feel of shuffling cards that aren't sleeved. But I also kind of like the aesthetic of a game that looks like it's been used, you know? Like, I kind of like my games to not look pristine anymore. And I think part of that is as a result of me having to admit that I can't keep them that way, and then maybe convincing myself retroactively that I actually like them to look a little beat up. You know what I mean? Like, so I don't know how genuinely it's come to the point where, however it started, I actually do appreciate being able to tell that a game has been well loved, as long as it's still playable and there's no, you know, hidden information that's now revealed by the cards being damaged or things like that. But anyways, I digress.
Yeah, no, I mean that's totally fair. I know we've had lots of conversations about sleeving, not sleeving, whether it's on this podcast or seen in many servers online. But you know, do whatever you want with your game. I love that. Like that, yeah, that's fun. Yeah. That's a great way to admire your games in a way where if you're not playing it, you just know it's been played, and like that's cool. That's a sweet little sentiment for some of those games.
It is. I kind of like that, Johnny. You know, my copy of The Crew, the Planet Nine, looks like it's been dragged through a few hedgerows and taken to about 100 different pubs. But there is something there to say, okay, well, I must have loved and really appreciated this game. So, and when I look at that, I think, okay, it brings me a bit of joy. I struggle to play it as a result of it now, but you know, that's kind of nice.
Right. It's kind of double-edged that way, because I don't know if double-edged is the right word, but you know, you want your games to, if you do want your games to look well played and loved, that's great. But some of these games are so hard to find that I totally also understand the other side of it. That's like, what if I can no longer play it because I didn't sleeve it when I got it? So I get that side of it too. And I do struggle with that on certain games where I know once that card gets damaged, I mean, I could use opaque sleeves, I suppose. So there are very few games that will be unplayable, but then you don't get to see the artwork and stuff on the back of the cards. So, yeah.
Yeah, my copy of Pups, actually, I bought used, and the 8 green card is bent in one of the corners, which you can visibly see on the front and back. So they're sleeved in opaque sleeves, so you can't see them, which is fine. But yeah, you do lose the card art on the back.
Yeah, I got lucky with Pups because my copy was used, but the person who sent it to me said it's like new. And when I got it, the front and the backs actually both look like new, but you can see that there was like some grease or dirty hands handling it, so that when you have the deck together, you can see the sides of it were very dirty. But I was able to use clear sleeves, and you can't tell at all that the sides looked that way. So I was able to maintain the artwork on both sides with clear sleeves, but had to sleeve it so that way you can't see the side. Because you could actually, I think with enough, if you see the cards enough, because it wasn't equally dirty on the sides, you could start telling, you might be able to tell some of the cards which ones they are. So I ended up sleeving it just for that reason. But
can I end with two jokes about sleeves?
I don't know. Ryan, is he allowed to do jokes?
Just a couple of little sleeve jokes.
The thing is, he's at least getting better and he's now asking if he can do the jokes versus just doing them. So I feel like I want to allow it because of how kind he was to ask.
Yeah.
But he is limited to 12 okay. jokes in a whole year. So these will be two 12 of your 12.
Games jokes. Okay.
12 jokes in the whole year. He's already done like four tonight.
What did the sleever say to his girlfriend? Sleeve me alone. Right, that's terrible. The other problem with using opaque sleeves on card games is you're not being very transparent with your players. End there, really, and I should probably do the outro now because there are probably people crying into their pillow. So I can't really go from a joke to talking about the fact we've launched a Patreon page because people probably won't want to. Anyway, we've launched a Patreon page.
Well, maybe we can have like a stretch goal. If we get to a certain number of patrons, Pat will stop telling jokes.
I'm going to joke you into submission.
I bet our patronage will skyrocket the second we promise that.
Or the jokes will get better. we'll see.
Can I become a patron?
Speaking of patrons, we did launch a Patreon page. Whether you like the jokes or not, we are passionate about trick takers and we are going to produce the show either way. We're so touched by all the feedback and, I mean, the fact anyone's listening at all. If you'd like to support the show financially, you can, and you can head over to patreon.com/tricktalkers. Of course, like I say, if that's not your bag, then no problem. Please keep listening to the show. We really appreciate it. You've been listening to Trick Talkers, of course, and if you have any questions, comments, recommendations, etc., we can be reached on Twitter at TrickTalkers or via email at TrickTalkers at, sorry, I can't even say it, or via email at TrickTalkers@gmail.com. Yeah. Thank you for listening and goodbye for now.
Good night, everyone.
See you around.